Okay, that was the president there angrily denying this report in The Atlantic that he once referred to wounded and dead U.S. service members as losers and suckers. At one point, he seemed to be speculating that his former chief of staff, the retired General John Kelly, was one of the sources in that article. He referred to General Kelly as somebody who was exhausted by the time he was finished in his role as chief of staff at the White House, and that he didn't do a good job, according to the president. So we'll see if General Kelly comes out and surfaces and speaks about all of this. We'll see about that. But first, let me go to Caitlin Collins over at the White House. Caitlin, the president was pretty fired up about that Atlantic article.
Yes, he was. And what he was saying there about John Kelly is really notable. The way he talked about him as he was leaving his chief of staff job. Remember, John Kelly is a retired four-star Marine general, went to combat, led Southern Command. And the president was saying basically he couldn't handle the chief of staff position and he was exhausted by the time he left the job. And the president going off on John Kelly and saying he doesn't know if he was a source of this story, but he says he could have been. It could have been a John Kelly type figure. And of course, that was because, as you saw there, he was asked by Bloomberg, why had John Kelly been one of the officials who had not come out and said anything about this story today? He hadn't confirmed it on the record, but he did not deny it. And of course, he is someone who was mentioned in that story, not only was there with the president in November 2018 in Paris, but also there was a story about the president going with John Kelly to Arlington Cemetery, where his son, who was killed in the Middle East, is buried, and a comment that the president made there. So it'll be interesting to see if John Kelly does respond to the president. We've seen him speak out only privately against President Trump. But Jim, something else I want to note from that press conference is this is the first time that the president has been asked in a substantive way about the poisoning of that Russian opposition figure, Alexei Navalny. The president was saying that he has not seen the evidence to say that he was poisoned. And that comes after yesterday, Germany and NATO, other NATO allies, came out and said that they had determined it was a Soviet-style nerve agent that he had been poisoned with. He is being treated in Germany, and the German chancellor is the one that confirmed that. And the NATO general secretary said it was proof beyond a doubt that he had been poisoned. Yet instead of the president saying that he would condemn Russia if they did, he said he'd be angry if it was them, but he was very cautious to say he didn't know that it was. And he said he wants to see more evidence going forward. And then, Jim, he chastised reporters for asking so much about Russia and not asking more about China.
Yeah, Caitlin, was yet another muted response from the president on an act of Russian aggression here, going after one of its own, in Alexei Navalny. Gloria Borgia, what stood out to you?
Well, just to follow up on what Caitlin is saying, I mean, obviously, the way he took after his former chief of staff, John Kelly, and calling this entire Atlantic piece, disparaging the magazine, calling the Atlantic piece a hoax, saying that we have 11 people. I guess they're putting together some kind of a dossier. I hate to use that word. Some kind of proof that what the magazine was saying. And by the way, what the magazine wrote has been confirmed by other news organizations, saying that this is not true. And the president portraying himself somehow as a victim here. And again, taking after Kelly, disparaging him, saying that he didn't do a good job, that he wasn't able to function in the last couple of months when he was White House chief of staff. He said that Kelly got eaten alive and, you know, went on and on about that. And couldn't seem to get away from the personal in that sense without coming out and saying, look, you know, defending himself on other terms. I mean, he, you know, he said he's helped the veterans, et cetera. But then he went and turned on Joe Biden and said, well, I watched his interviews today and you guys threw him softballs effectively. He said these are questions that were not meant for a grown up. I'm not quite sure what he meant by that. But again, you know, seems very angry about this. And I don't know who else other than John Kelly he believes was the source for this, unless he believes that the sources were manufactured, which, of course, they were not.
And Brian Stelter, it was almost as if he was giving you a plug during this news conference. He referred to the Atlantic magazine story as a hoax and saying it was just like the Russia investigation and so on.
He's proving the point of my new book because he uses the word hoax, this very malicious word, in order to shut down conversation and cause people not to ask questions. But thankfully, the press corps is asking about these key points in the Atlantic article. On the factual statements by the president, a lot of what he says is hyperbole, complaining about the magazine. But when he says the Atlantic is a third-rate magazine that's not going to be in business much longer, that's just factually untrue. Its financials are stable. It is doing very well. And Jeffrey Goldberg, the reporter of this piece, is one of the most respected journalists in Washington. So all of that has to be factored in when we know he has a lot of credibility and Trump does not. I think it's really notable, Jim, that Fox News has matched some of the reporting that the Atlantic has. Fox's Jennifer Griffin has reported, quoting two former senior Trump administration officials, that yes, the president did disparage veterans, did not want to drive to the cemetery that day in France. So Fox might downplay this story. They're going to try to run away from this story on their own network. But Fox has its own reporting to back this up, and that makes it even harder for the president to deny. This is one of those times when Fox's reporting is important. You know, it's going to be even harder for the president to dispute it. But, Jim, I think this puts more pressure on these anonymous sources to come forward, to think about whether they can put their names to these quotes. Let's see if John Kelly, for example, comes out and confirms or denies.
It's a very good question. And Daniel Dale, what stood out to you? There was a lot to fact check there. I didn't want to see a live picture of you listening to that. I thought it might be painful, but as a fact checker, that was tough.
It always is with the president, Jim. The president said convalescent plasma is having a tremendous impact in the fight against the coronavirus. As Dr. Fauci and an expert panel of the National Institutes of Health have said, we do not have definitive conclusive proof that that is actually effective. The jury is very much still out. As Caitlin said, the president said that we do not have proof of the poisoning of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny. As she said, the NATO Secretary General said we have proof beyond doubt. So that's a very different statement. Trump again said that Joe Biden wants to shut the country down, that he has a plan for a blanket shutdown. Biden has not said he wants to, has not introduced any plan. Rather, what he said is that we have to listen to scientists. And if in the future, if there's a future crisis and the scientists said that we need to shut it down to fight it, he would in that case shut it down. He again said that we'd look good in terms of coronavirus numbers if we removed the state of New York. Leaving aside how absurd that is, just eliminating a major state from the numbers, we would still have more than 150,000 deaths if you did not count New York deaths. And Jim, finally, I'll note one stitch of progress, because it's rare we see progress as fact checkers. The president has lied more than 150 times that he is the one who got the Veterans Choice healthcare program passed. He did it again yesterday. But today in the briefing, he amended the claim, I think for the first time ever, and said accurately that he got the VA Mission Act signed. That's an act that amended the choice program. So very rare progress, a little hint of progress, but it's something.
It shows he's watching, Daniel. All right, thank you for that. We appreciate that, all of you. And I want to get straight to the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's joining us now. Dr. Fauci, thanks so much for joining us. Before I get to some of the questions we wanted to talk to you about, I have to ask you, because the president has been mentioning this over the last couple of days, and I know you don't like to be put side by side with the president in terms of what he says, but he's saying that we're rounding the corner when it comes to the coronavirus. What do you make of that characterization?
You know, I'm not sure what he means. There are certain states that are actually doing well in the sense of that the case numbers are coming down. Our concern right now is that there are a number of states, particularly, for example, the Dakotas, Montana, Michigan, Minnesota, and others, who are starting to have an uptick in what we call percent positive of testing, which generally is a predictor that there's going to be a problem. And that's one of the reasons, Jim, why we're concerned about the upcoming Labor Day weekend. We want to make sure that in all over the country, but particularly in the vulnerable states that are starting to show an uptick, that we abide by the public health mandates and rules that we talk about all the time over the weekend, and not, in essence, have the same kind of surges that we have seen following other holiday weekends like the 4th of July and Memorial Day. So we really want to pay attention to that. And hopefully people, particularly the younger people, will pay attention to things like wearing a mask, avoiding close contact, avoiding crowds, and doing whatever you can possibly do outdoors as opposed to indoors. If we do that, we should get through the weekend okay.
That is absolutely critical. And we're now 7 months into this crisis, as you know all too well. I want to play for our viewers what you said at the early stages of this in March. Let's listen to this.
Looking at what we're seeing now, you know, I would say between 100 and 200,000 cases, but I don't want to be held to that because deaths. I mean, we're going to have millions of cases.
Back in March, 200,000 deaths was almost unimaginable, but now the CDC expects the death toll to surpass that number in the next few weeks. If the United States continues on this current track, what will the next 6 or 7 months look like? It does sound nightmarish.
Well, yes, it's obviously disturbing, Jim, particularly as I've said to you and others on this show multiple times, we've got to get our baseline back down to a much lower level. We're hovering at around 40,000 cases a day. You know, we were hanging around 20,000 for several weeks in a row. Then we had the surge in the southern states, Florida, Texas, California, Arizona, and we went right up to about 70,000. We're down now to 40. We've got to get it much lower than that, because if you go to a low baseline and then you get cases that occur, you can actually handle them, get good identification, isolation, and contact tracing. But when you have an intensity of community spread, it makes it that much more difficult. And that's the reason why I keep saying over and over again, we've got to be very careful, particularly as we enter this holiday weekend.
Absolutely. And the president just now repeated what he's been saying, that if we had much less testing or no testing, you wouldn't be reporting cases. Have you talked to him about this? Does he not understand that even if you don't test, the cases still exist?
You know, I have not specifically spoken to the president about that, but I think, you know, it's very clear in the White House how I feel and how people like Dr. Birx feels, is that it really is important to do the kinds of testing that we're talking about. And these are indeed new cases. And the reason we know they're new cases, because when you have the increase in cases, it's invariably followed by an increase in hospitalization and ultimately by an increase in deaths. That's the real bottom line. The critical issue is the percent positives of the tests that you do. And we're starting to see an uptick in that in certain areas. That's disturbing. And that's why we call out to the governors and the leaders of those states to please pay attention to that, because that can be a predictor of surges that we really are trying to avoid.
And Dr. Fauci, I want to ask you about this model by the University of Washington that it just is stunning. And I know you've had questions about models in the past. They're not always what they're cracked up to be, I think, in your view. But this new model estimates that the U.S. death toll could surpass 400,000 by January of 2021. That is a stunning number. And the researchers behind that model say that's partly because they're seeing declining mask use. Is that what you're seeing? And what do you make of that estimate?
Well, you know, as I said, and you said it yourself, Jim, you've got to be careful with models. It depends on the assumptions that you put into the model. The model got that high. I think it was 410,000 they predicted by January, because that's taking in the factor that as we get into the winter, the fall and the winter, there's going to be a lot more indoor activity as opposed to outdoor activity. And if you combine indoor activity with the lack of uniform utilization of masks, then you could start really getting into trouble. That's the reason why we say right now, outdoor is always better than indoor. But when you get into the cold of the late fall and the early winter, sometimes it's impossible to do activities outdoors. And if you're going to do it indoors, particularly if there's crowds, you really need to wear a mask. So that model was saying, you know, if we don't have very, very strong, pronounced utilization of masks almost uniformly, you can get into the same kind of trouble that they're predicting, namely a considerable amount of cases. In this case, we are talking about 410,000 deaths, which I surely hope we don't even approach that.
Do you think it's possible?
Of course it's possible. I mean, you know, we've done these dances, as it were, Jim, with the models back and forth. You put one assumption in, you get this out, you pull out the assumption, another thing happens. What the models are useful for is that they're telling you if you do a lot of indoor activity and you don't utilize masks to the utmost, you very likely will get to this number. We can mitigate that. You know, if I've always said, I mean, models are good to give you an idea of what you can expect. But when you see that, to me, it's a good heads up and say, wait a minute, we don't want to get to that number by any stretch of the imagination. So what are we going to do to prevent us from getting that number? So in some respects, although the number's a little scary, Jim, it may be a sort of a nudge for us to realize that we can do something to stop that. One of the things we can do, as you mentioned, is a more uniform utilization of masks.
All right. And numerous sources within the administration are telling us that the president is ramping up pressure on health officials to deliver good news on the vaccine front before the November election. Just moments ago, President Trump said we could probably have the vaccine sometime in October. Moncef Slaoui, the head of Operation Warp Speed, said today that he would resign if he saw undue interference in the process. Would you do the same?
Well, I mean, I'm not a regulator. I mean, I just do the science. I report the science in an accurate way. And certainly, if I saw interference, I would be very disturbed and would call it out. I'm assuming that we're not going to get any interference. Of course, as I always do, Jim, you know that.
That's true. But if you see that kind of interference, that kind of undue pressure, you would speak up.
Well, I would. But, Jim, I don't think you're going to see that because a lot of what we're talking about is transparency. I think the public needs to understand when the data come in on the vaccine results, you know, they come into what's called the Data and Safety Monitoring Board, which is an independent group of people who evaluate the data, evaluate the safety of it, and report on this. This ultimately becomes public knowledge anyway. So, I mean, I have faith in the system that the FDA will do what they promise, and they promise that they will make decisions on a regulatory basis purely on the basis of the science and the evidence. And I'm counting on them to do that.
And we've now seen data on Russia's vaccine. In phase one and two, that vaccine produced an immune response and only mild side effects. You previously said you seriously doubt Russia had produced a safe and effective vaccine. Do you still have some doubts about what the Russians are up to after seeing this new data?
No, Jim, I think we need to remove the confusion about this. The thing that concerned me and others when they said they have a vaccine that they're going to be giving to a whole bunch of people. And what I said is that, well, first you better prove that it's safe and effective before you make a decision to distribute the vaccine widely. What the Russians have done now was the correct thing. They did a phase one study, a two-part phase one study. In 40 people, they found it was safe and it induced a reasonable immune response. So I congratulate them on that. That's what they should be doing. Do a phase one study, then a phase two study, then do a phase three study for efficacy and safety. And if it looks like it works, I really hope they have a vaccine that works. We need as many vaccines as we possibly can get into the system.
Absolutely. And I want to ask you about the health effects of evictions. I don't know if you've seen this story yet, Dr. Fauci, but our Kyung La, one of our colleagues here at CNN, did a report. It was a very moving report on a family with two young kids being evicted and an older woman who is going to be put out on the street. What are the possible health effects of evictions in the middle of a pandemic? It's not something that we've talked about, I don't think, quite enough.
Yeah. Well, any disruptions of the normal course of events of a person's life clearly can be deleterious to everything we care about with public health. I mean, when you evict somebody and homeless, we know how vulnerable the homeless are to so many things, including things like COVID infection of the coronavirus. So, I mean, the one thing we don't want to see is a lot of people who would not have been homeless to now be homeless. That just complicates everything we're trying to do from a public health standpoint.
And as we head into the Labor Day weekend, I know you talked about this a little bit earlier, what people should not do. What activities would you give your stamp of approval to? If people are out there wondering, if I need Dr. Fauci's blessing on this activity, what activity would that be? Outdoor barbecues, that sort of thing, hiking?
Yeah, it would be outdoors. I mean, you know, whether you like to hike or not, you know, go out on a trail, breathe the fresh air, enjoy the warm weather. If you're going to be on the beach, beaches are fine as long as you try to keep some distance between yourselves and others. I mean, I see pictures on beaches and people can relatively easy separate themselves from others. Just try and do outdoor activities. If you're going to do it socially with other people, don't make it a large crowd. A couple of friends that you're intimately connected with good friends, you have a barbecue, you do the things you want to do. Stay outside. Do the kinds of things, if you're going to be close to people that you can't keep distance, wear a mask, avoid crowds, wash your hands frequently, and as you said and I say, do things outdoors. We are fortunate we're still in a season where we can enjoy things outdoors. So this could be a good weekend for everyone without putting yourselves into the danger of either acquiring or transmitting infection.
And how will you be spending the Labor Day weekend?
I'm
Does Dr.
Be
Fauci
working,
have, unfortunately, have, Jim, have any but... plans?
Well, I have a bunch of work I need to do, but I'm going to go on a very long little mini hike with my wife. I enjoy that very much. I might even go down to the CNO Canal and maybe even put a little fishing line into the water and see what I can catch.
And how is your health? You recently had surgery on your vocal cords. I can tell there's a difference. Your voice sounds like it feels better. Are you feeling better now?
No. I feel great, Jim. In fact, I got a couple of emails from people saying they heard me either on the radio or on TV, and they couldn't believe it was me because I don't sound like Vito Corleone anymore. I sound like Tony Fauci.
And how are you holding up? I know I've seen you talk about how your personal life is going, how your family is dealing with all of this. And there were some rough, there have been some rough moments along the way during this pandemic. Have those things improved? How are things going right now for you and your family?
I'm doing fine, Jim. I have a great family. My wife is amazing. My children are very strong. But, you know, the things have not gotten better with regard to the hassles from the far extreme people who make threats, both to me, my family, my wife, and my daughters. I don't mind them doing it to me. I don't really care that I blow that off. But I don't really like to see my wife and my children being hassled. But that's just the nature of the divisiveness in our society. It's just part of the facts of life. Unfortunate, but just part of the facts of life.
Well, we hope you get some time over this Labor Day weekend to decompress a little bit. You can't work all the time, Dr. Fauci. We know you like to work, but you can't do it around the clock or it catches up with you, as we all know. But we appreciate you coming on and hanging in there as there were some other news developing during the first part of this hour. But Dr. Anthony Fauci, thanks very much for joining us. Have a good Labor Day weekend and hope you stay safe as well. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you too, Jim. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right.
Take care.
You too. And coming up, former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel joins me. I'll get his reaction to a stunning report detailing President Trump's insulting comments about dead and wounded American troops. This is a CNN Situation Room special report. Tonight, more fallout about a truly stunning report about President Trump's apparent disdain for fallen American troops. For more on today's developments, I want to bring in former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Mr. Secretary, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. I want to get your reaction to this reporting in The Atlantic that President Trump called fallen U.S. troops losers and suckers, and he apparently disparaged wounded veterans, according to this report. But just before I get to that, I want to ask you, you saw what the president was saying just a few moments ago during his press conference about the former chief of staff, retired General John Kelly. He seemed to disparage John Kelly, saying he didn't do a good job, that he was exhausted on the way out, sort of mocked his reputation as being a tough guy and so on. What did you think of that?
Well, Jim, thank you for having me. I did see it. It was disgusting. If this wasn't so serious, if this wasn't coming from the commander-in-chief of the United States of America to say this about a four-star general who has committed, he and his family committed their lives to this country, given a son to this country in battle, and to say that it is degrading, it's despicable, and there is no defense of it. There is no defense of it. Of what he has said about General Kelly. I worked with General Kelly when I was Secretary of Defense. There is no more of an honorable man than John Kelly, or no more of a patriot committed to this country than John Kelly.
And so do you believe what The Atlantic is reporting about the president's comments about fallen troops being losers and suckers and so on?
Well, Jim, like all things, I have to refer back to what the president himself has said to validate what that article said. starting with what he said about John McCain over the years. And he was given a chance to rescind those statements today, just a few minutes ago, as you know, and he wouldn't. The issue in the 2018 going to the American military cemetery in France, that's BS. Every one of the leaders who were there, the leader of Germany, leader of France, leader of Canada, other leaders, they drove to honor U.S. Marines for what they did in World War II. Him taking almost $4 billion out of defense contracting monies that were going to build schools and hospitals and facilities for the American troops and their families. I mean, a whole list of things that he has done to debase our military. And, you know, watching this day after day, if it wasn't so serious, Jim, it'd be like a clown show. It'd be like a daily clown show. You know, I saw Bill Cohen's comments earlier in the last hour with you when he talked about how the United States has fallen in the eyes of the world, how we have, post-World War II, been a leader. We've been respected for our values, our morals. We haven't done anything right. We've made a lot of mistakes. But everybody knew they could count on us. They could count on a president who said the right things, although we all disagree with different actions. But we've lost that. And I think that's the bigger story here. And then what this does, this Atlantic story, it focuses on the debasement of our veterans, of our men and women who give of themselves to this country. I mean, it's really astounding.
And I sense the passion coming out of your voice. We heard the same from the former secretary, William Cohen. What is it about this story? What is it about this subject that so concerns people in the military community, people like yourself? And concern is not really a strong enough word. You get the sense that there are people in the military community who are just outraged by the president's behavior and what has been reported in the Atlantic magazine.
Well, Jim, part of my reaction is not just as the former Secretary of Defense, the leader of our armed forces in America and a former United States senator, but more to the point, I am a veteran myself. My brother Tom and I served together in Vietnam in 1968. We served with, met the finest people we've ever known in our lives, their families, everything they represent. That's where I start. But then to your more general question, he has used the military for 3.5 years, used them as props in his campaigns. And every time he announces something, he's always used them as props. What he did in Washington, D.C. a couple of months ago when he brought in an airborne division camped outside of Washington, D.C., everything he uses our military. He uses our people. He uses our tradition in the military of service. I don't know if every one of those comments in that Atlantic magazine was correct. I don't know. I would say this about those who evidently made those comments, that Mr. Goldberg, who is a very respected journalist, and I know him. It is their time now. It is their time now to step forward and use their names. I mean, quit enabling this guy. Come on, show some courage. Do you have any courage at all? It's easy to say things when it's anonymous. Nobody's using your name. Not so easy when you have to step out in front. Now is the time to do this, or I fear another 4 years, not only what he's doing to our military, but what he's doing to this country.
All right. Former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel calling out those sources who spoke to Jeff Goldberg in the Atlantic magazine to come forward and say what they know. Secretary Hagel, some strong comments tonight. We appreciate it very much. Thank you, sir. Just ahead, Joe Biden gives an emotional thank you very much. New interview to CNN. We'll bring you much more right after a quick break. Revelations about President. 2020 presidential campaign is heating up as the summer winds down. The Biden campaign marked a significant shift this week as the Democratic nominee made his first trip outside the Northeast since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. Let's discuss with our chief political analyst, Gloria Borger. Gloria, we definitely saw a shift in Joe Biden's campaign this week. He was traveling out of the state of Delaware, out of the Philadelphia area. He took more questions than he has previously.
Right.
And the campaign is starting To feel the heat as we get close to Election Day. It's certainly a new phase.
It is a new phase. I think, you know, you saw Biden go to Kenosha. You saw Biden have a press conference today responding to the Atlantic article and to talk about the economy. I think they're trying to get the vice president out there and Kamala Harris out there in a safe way. They're not going to be having large rallies. They're going to be encouraging people to wear masks. But I do think they believe that voters do want to see you in their state or make the effort in one way or another to get out there and show that they really want their votes.
And I want to play a clip for our viewers from your new documentary. It's going to be terrific. Let's watch and then talk about it on the other side.
While the vice president tried to help his son tried to help his father.
I absolutely believe, and I'll believe it till the day I die, that the thing that Beau was most afraid of was not dying. What he was most afraid of is the impact it would have on his dad. That it would really take his dad out.
Did he tell you that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All the time.
It's something the vice president wrote about in 2017 in his book, Promise Me Dad.
Beau just made me promise. This was just before he died. He said, Dad, you got to promise me you're going to be okay. I said, Bo, I'll be. He said, Dad, look at me. Look me in the eye, Dad. Give me your word as a Biden, Dad. You're going to be okay.
Are you okay?
I am, because it is still emotional, but I knew what he meant. He was worried I'd walk away from everything I worked in my whole life, the things I cared about. He knew I'd take care of the family. He never wondered about that. But he didn't want me walking away.
Homeward, march.
Beau Biden died on May 30th, 2015. He was 46 years old.
Is it true you keep Beau's rosary with you?
Got in my pocket.
All the time?
I keep it all the time. He had it when he passed away. It was more gold. You can see it's worn.
And Gloria, what struck you from your conversations with Joe Biden? I mean, that was definitely an emotional moment there.
It was. I mean, what struck me from the vice president and all the reporting and the people we interviewed on this piece is that this is a man who's been in public life one way or another for almost five decades. And when you look back on it, you know, here's a guy who started as the candidate of change, Jim, when he was 29 years old in 1972. He was running for a seat in the Senate. Nobody thought he could win. He wasn't even old enough to serve in the Senate at that time, because, of course, you have to be 30. He was audacious and arrogant. He tried and he beat a very popular Republican incumbent. And now, you see, all these years later and all he's been through in his life, not only the tragedy with Beau, but losing his wife and baby daughter in a car accident right after he got elected to that Senate seat. You see, after all he's been through, he's still kind of working at it. And, you know, he told me, look, I wouldn't have run if it weren't for Charlottesville and the way the president reacted to that. But he somehow felt that he needed to do it. And when I talked to his friends and people who have known him for years, they somehow have this sense that the empathy we talk about with Joe Biden is something that the country might need right now. Mm. And that he is the polar opposite, of course, of Donald Trump.
That is so true. And Beau Biden's service in the military, how much of that do you think influenced Joe Biden's outrage today over that Atlantic story?
A lot. Biden talks a lot about how proud he is of Beau Biden's service in Iraq. And you heard him today say, look, my son was an attorney general, and he did this because he loves his country. And so what you saw from Biden today was a very visceral reaction to what is reported in The Atlantic. So it wasn't just that, you know, that it was disgraceful, if true. There was a kind of an emotional part of him which said, wait a minute, this is my son who was in Iraq. This is my son who served. And what if he had died there? How would I have felt if my son were one of those who had fallen. And so I think, you know, Biden is an emotional guy. He's emotional about his family. In this documentary, I ask him about his sister, and he kind of tears up talking about his sister, who's run almost every campaign he's ever been in. And he's so emotional about Beau and his grief over that. And I think we saw that today.
All right, Gloria Borger, we are looking forward to this documentary coming
up.
Thanks so much for laying it out for us. We appreciate it. And be sure to tune in this coming Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern for our CNN special report. Gloria just talked about it a few moments ago. Fight for the White House, Joe Biden's long journey. And before we leave you this evening, we want to take a moment to remember some of the people we've lost to the coronavirus pandemic. Bobby Ann Huff of Indiana was 73 years old. She was a strong and funny woman who leaves behind three children and seven grandchildren. Bobby put herself through nursing school as a young woman and later became a special educator. Liaquat Muhammad of New York was 70 years old. He was originally from Trinidad and moved to the United States in the 1980s. He was a loving father and grandfather who enjoyed taking road trips with his family. May they rest in peace, and may all of the people who have been taken by this terrible virus also rest in peace. We're thinking about all of them on this Labor Day weekend. I'm Jim Acosta. Thanks very much for watching. Have a very safe and healthy Labor Day weekend. Wear your mask, stay safe, listen to Dr. Fauci, and Aaron Burnett Out Front starts right now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.